Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
Good morning, Whitey.
Yes, good morning. And I've sort of just been at the back. The phone lines are blocked.
Are they?
For people trying to get onto the quiz next Tuesday. So they're getting in early.
Well, that's good play. Because as you rightly know, it's a hot ticket.
It is, absolutely.
Being a contestant on the world famous five question quiz. What's happened? What's happened over there?
Let's try to get my phone out of my pocket.
Oh, right.
A very big day. There's some very interesting things to talk about this morning on the program.
Well, is it interesting things every morning?
Yeah, I know, but particularly there's some really interesting stories that I've sort of come across over the last little bit.
Have they come across your desk?
Come across my desk?
Where is your desk?
No, I'm not sure. I was about to say. Anyway.
Well, it's nice to have you. It's nice to have one, Adam. It's even better when you've got two. Adam Ramanauskas is a former Bombers champion these days, manager to the Stars. Boy, it's good to have him on a Friday morning. Good morning, Rama.
Yes, good morning. Five question quiz now.
It's good.
Yes, it's been a streamlining
it'll be
of
three,
process.
It'll be three soon.
I'm a bit disappointed about the five. There's been a lot of commentary, a lot of feedback that they're disappointed that it's been reduced from seven to five.
Where's that commentary coming from?
Oh, it's overwhelming.
I've missed it.
Flooded on the text messages.
Evidence of this? Is there any evidence?
When you said to us continually in the mornings, gee, I've only got six questions today. I don't know what to do.
Gets like that a bit. But anyway, we're right.
That's why we cut it back to five, just to make sure we had enough, Rama.
We'll talk about this shortly, I'm sure, but I'm going to do a little bit of practice match talk.
It's March. You're allowed to. You're allowed to do that.
I'm a buyer last night. I'm a buyer.
What do you mean?
I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed the pace of the game, goals, speed. Yep, I'm buying last night. If that's what we're in for this season, I think it's a good product to watch.
Righto. So the scoreline officially for those playing at home. 19-11 to 15-9, so 125 to 99, that's 224 points, which I imagine is much higher than the average.
Mm, much higher.
Certainly from last season, because we're playing reduced minutes. So
it's 13 goals in the first quarter, 8 goals to 5.
Yes, that's a fast start, we like to call that. But clearly a small sample size, as we say around here, but just practice match sort of stuff, was there, in terms of the intensity of the contest, Rama, Whitey, was there enough of that to satisfy you, or was it just too free-flowing up and down the games too fast again?
You want me to go first?
You go first.
I think it's too early to tell. I think it's one game.
Well, it is. What you've seen?
What I saw of it last night, it was fine. Yep, it was pretty good. I mean, the thing about it is that, and we talked about this a lot during the week, both teams played fairly strong sides. Mm. So it is a reasonably accurate portrayal of what you'll get in round one, I guess. You've got to kind of go rammer on what the coaches are saying. You know, both coaches last night talked about it, and from what we saw through the scratch matches the week before, is that this man on the mark thing is having an impact on the way the game's being played. It's almost an intent thing as well, that the players know that the guys on the mark can't move, so they feel a bit freer in their thought process as to what they're going to do.
Well, a lot of time when a player took a mark near the boundary particularly, the man on the mark was actually able to corral the kicker to kick it along the line. Now you see...
Now, the reality is they should never have been able to do that.
No, that's
to the
right.
Letter of the law.
Now you see continually coming back inboard. You know, opening that little pocket of space, that 10-metre little space, coming back inboard because the person on the mark has to stand there. You look at the goal that I think Brad Hill kicked in the first quarter as one little example where Wietering was on the mark, had to stand there, got the little handball, Brad Hill's able to kick a goal. So, but put that man at the mark to one side. St Kilda, they're an interesting watch because the way they've set up their team now, they've got these guys in the middle of the ground, which are, I'm not going to call them slow, but they're more inside mids the way they played last night. You look at Steele and Seb Ross particularly. Then they've got all this speed on all the edges, Like last night, Jack Sinclair goes to halfback, has a really good game, who we'll speak to later. Then they've got Higgins now forward of the ball. Then they've got Loney forward of the ball. Then they've got Butler forward of the ball. They've got all this pace now around.
And creativity as well.
Yes, around the contest where the ball last night with St Kilda seemed to be in constant movement. There wasn't a time last night where St Kilda got to a point where they had to slow the game down, kick sideways, backwards, all that sort of rubbish that we've become used to over so many years. They wanted the ball in constant motion.
I still think half, and I've spoken about this a lot, about the way the game is played. It's not necessarily about the rules. It's about the intent of the coaches and the intent of the players. So when you're playing a practice match, the intent is more to take the game on and take a risk because the ramifications don't matter so much. So that's why I'll be reserved in making a comment on the rule change, even through the entire weekend, because until I think we get to round four, round five of the regular season, I don't think we're really going to get an accurate portrayal of whether this rule is going to make a big impact. I don't think it's going to be a negative thing on the game, but I keep going back to intent. And last night it just looked like, because the man on the mark couldn't move, they had a much more positive outlook on what to do.
Who are you licking your lips over? We'll throw it open to the SMS 204169052.
This is really deep dive into practice matches.
Yeah, well, just this is a bit of a summary. I actually didn't see the game because I was training, but inspiring the nation. But I'm keen to get some feedback. I keep hearing Bradley Hill was outstanding.
No, he was good last night. Yep.
And I keep hearing that Jack Silvani did a bloody good job for the Blues.
I think from St Kilda's point of view, and he wasn't there particularly for the second half of the season, is Gresham.
Yep.
I think we forget how good of a player he is. Last night there was passages of play where he was just involved. So it's another icing on the cake. Brad Crouch was obviously in there last night. So I think St Kilda, if that's the style that they're looking at for the season, Brett Ratten spoke about his defensive 50 stoppages where they conceded a few goals last night. So they cleaned that side of the game up. But probably Gresham from a St Kilda point of view, I just think it adds again. And it shows, we've spoken about St Kilda a couple of times over recent weeks, thinking, are they a team that's going to look jaded from last year, from, you know, slow starting?
I like what you did there with the Gresham talk, jaded.
Yes, yes. I didn't even think of that. Well done. but looking at them last night, it says to me they're ready. They're going to be ready. They're going to be ready to go to start the season.
It's a practice match.
No, ready.
They're only playing two practice matches, not usually your four or five practice matches that they're see so often. But,
and they've got a lot of injuries too still.
Carlton, on the other hand, I think that they're going to be really knocking on the door. Their concern still is their tall forwards. Now, Harry Mackay goes down last night with an ankle injury. They've still got a couple of... You look at their goal kickers last night, Silvani 3, McDonald 2, Williams 2, Pitney 2, Murphy Fisher 2. So not a lot of tall timber there kicking goals for the...
Pitney getting 2 is a good result.
Good result. But then
pushing forward, the old chestnut.
He got a stoppage goal. Took the ball out of the run, kicked the goal.
Like that. Big pit-o.
Look at St Kilda. King's got 3, Membry's got 3. So, you know.
All right, to answer your question, half, Rammer's going on a bit. It's about a practice match.
By the way, you said something before. If you ever write another book, you need to call it Ramification. I just thought of that when you said it, Whitey. That's his next book title.
Maybe on a Monday we can have a segment and get it sponsored.
Yes! Great idea!
Weekend's Ramification.
Yes!
Not bad.
Yeah, yes!
That's good.
Yeah. All right, there's something to play with there.
What sort of sponsor would we have for that?
Well, we'll take anything. Doesn't really matter.
All right.
Doesn't really matter. What do you got for me? Hang on. Off the SMS. This is funny. This is from your man, Juppy. More preseason talk. We've already had the world's most comprehensive preview of tonight's game on the Collingwood Power half hour with Before Six with Joey. Did you talk Collingwood again, Joe?
I did full preview.
Oh, come on. Injuries and ins and outs, he's telling me.
I'm surprised you didn't have an assistant coach on the preview of the game.
Solid work, Juppy. Nice to have you on board.
He has got his Collingwood jumper on again this morning.
Now, before we
only
move
30
on...
30-year-old that does that.
I'm okay with that. He's got the colours on. That's okay. John's on the road. He wants to talk to you, gentlemen. Hello, John.
Okay, fellas. I think the rule's all right, actually. I quite like it, just as long as you can still tackle a person. And like in the old days, I think it's all right, because I used to play on myself a fair bit. The way I play, so I reckon it would be good, mate. Open up the game a bit. Be good.
Yep, no, that's certainly the theme that's coming through today, John, and certainly the, I think the hope from the headquarters campaign to make this happen, this opening the game up situation from a mark or free kick. So, well, yeah, the boys are saying it's a good thing. You're saying it's a good thing. The SMSs are saying it's opened the game up. So let's give it a go and see what happens.
I had a bet last night on the game, Sean McKernan to give away the first 50-metre penalty for not standing on the mark properly. Got the $1.05.
Oh, you're...
anyway, now...
You're a harsh man.
This is what I would think from what I saw last night. Sam Walsh, big tick, playing inside mid, or starting inside the centre square, and had 25 disposals and looked really good. So I'd give him a tick.
Yep.
Is something a bit different from last year when he played more outside?
I thought you said it was only a practice match.
No, I'm saying...
You've written notes.
You've made notes.
I'm not looking at the overall picture. I was looking for little morsels.
But you've got notes?
Yeah, I've got notes.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
for a practice match.
Taking my job seriously.
I was just checking.
Jack Higgins looked like he'd played for St Kilda for 5 years, had 24 disposals and did what he did a lot at Richmond, but I think you could already see that he's going to have more responsibility and more sort of, you know, major-type midfield minutes.
It's Joey Pignataro sort of analytics stuff from you for the netball yesterday.
Yeah. I love Hunter Clark, and it was good to see him playing more midfield as opposed to sort of half-back. I think his composure... he's almost like a Pendlebury, I reckon, a new Pendlebury coming through the way he plays. Obviously, he's a right footer, but I really like what he did. Clearly, Adam Saad and Zach Williams would have excited Carlton fans with the way that they played. You know, they both played the way that they would normally play. You mentioned Jack Silvani. I mean, he took some really good contested marks,
really good.
Three goals, and I think that's really exciting. So they were the things that stood out for me from watching the game last night. And from an overall point of view, I reckon the best part of the game, I think it was David Cunningham kicked the goal, and just to hear the roar of the fans, like the Carlton fans were really up and about.
How many were there?
Got them within 6 points. I think there's about 18,000,
I would say.
It's
good.
I don't know exactly. That would be my gut feel. But just to hear that roar that we haven't heard for such a long time, I think that was almost the highlight of the game. But the last thing I'll say is, because we've clearly spoken too much about a practice match. Is that, you know, we see that, oh, the rule change has opened up the game, et cetera, et cetera. I think for the entire first quarter, and I stand to be corrected here because it's not on my notes, I believe there were 5 tackles in the first quarter.
That's not a lot.
So it really was, you know.
Pre-season 40.
There were 13 goals, so there's not going to be a lot of tackles. The quarter went for 35 minutes.
Yeah, and how long, you know what I'd like to get the stopwatch at, how long is it taking from the goal being kicked the ball being bounced back in the middle? Because I actually timed
45 seconds.
I timed it at one point. It went 53 or 58 seconds. So if there are 13 goals kicked, that's nearly 13 minutes of where the ball's just going back to the middle.
Just trying to recoup some cash.
Well, it was on Fox, so
of
there was no
it was,
ads.
Yeah, no,
but
so, yeah.
But I think that's time. I think that's a really interesting point, though, that we talk about the game going 35 minutes in that quarter. Well, you know, do the maths. That's nearly 13 minutes of the ball just going back to the middle.
So that's like almost 13 minutes of the ball going back
to
the middle.
You can either have 35 minutes of football or 35 minutes of maths.
We'll move on. We'll stay on footy, though, because outside of the world's greatest practice match last night that's capturing the hearts of the nation, the attention of the nation this morning, there was another big story yesterday in footy with the announcement that West Coast small forward Willy Rioli is able to return to football in round 23 after his potential 4-year doping ban was cut in half. So August 20, he's able to play again. He's able to train from June 20 with the West Coast Eagles. Neither Asada nor WADA are planning to appeal the AFL's sentence, says Johnny Ralph in the Herald Sun today. I'll throw it at you first up, Whitey. Are you surprised that, considering the charges that were laid against him, that the 4-year was cut in half? Because for those that might not be aware, two of the offences were you trying to use a prohibited method of urine substitution. So try and tamper with the sample, get something else to be his sample for the test.
Probably a little bit, considering the seriousness of the charge. But I must confess, I've got to the point where it's just gone on so long that I sort of like, oh, whatever. Just, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's just... I'm not sort of downplaying the seriousness of what took place, because obviously you can't have that happening for two reasons. Firstly, what was in his system, but secondly, the lack of integrity around the way he went about his test. But it's just been dragging on so long. So
it has.
Kind of got to the point where, well, at the end of the day, he did admit full guilt and took full responsibility. So often when that happens, you do get a reduction in your penalty, which I think is what has happened here.
Rama?
I'm glad it's over, because that young man shouldn't have had to wait.
Shouldn't. That's absolutely correct.
Should not have had to wait this long to get a result. Now, obviously, it's a... he's still banned, so...
Yep, yeah, he hasn't played for...
No, so he's going to be a couple of years out of the game, so he can come back. He's allowed to train 2 months before that ban ends, so I think he's able to be back on the 20th of June. So it gives him a chance to return to some sort of football this year. I think the ban's fair at the end of the day. There's no precedence with what he's done, I think, in our game, as you know, you read here. I think if Asada or Wada were upset with it, they would appeal. They're saying they're not going to appeal, so I think everybody's satisfied and we move on, and this young man can get on with his life.
I must admit, I was staggered that they'd cut it in half and just let it sit at that. If this was a cyclist or a track and field athlete or Olympian across the globe, there is no way that a charge of urine substitution would get you a half sentence. I was really surprised. Now, clearly, Asada and Wada, as you rightly say, Rama, don't seem to have too big an issue with it. So, no. And I don't know why that is. Mm. But just imagine if this was a Tour de France story.
Yep.
There's no way that athlete is getting half charge.
I think that's a fair call.
And I can't work out why that would be different in this case.
The only way I can work that out is because what was in his system in the end? And it was cannabis.
Yep.
If it was something else,
if it was a performance enhancing,
that may be different then.
Now, the argument is that marijuana, cannabis, whatever you want to call it, that is performance enhancing as well. But if it was an anabolic steroid or something like that, it might have been a different situation.
Yes. That's the only reason I can see.
Mm. Still a match day charge, though. That's the thing that. Yeah, I was surprised. I was really surprised, I must admit. I don't begrudge Willie's opportunity to come back up to any level, but had it been another athlete in another sport across the globe, I don't think we're getting 2 years instead of four.
You got a well said half and a tick and an emoji clapping of hands.
Did I?
Yeah.
Hey, here we
so
go.
You wonder, the other thing I wonder is the three strike policy. Was this the first time this has happened, or was there strikes previous to this that he'd test positive to cannabis before? So we don't have that level of information either.
No, but urine substitution has to be... I would have thought... Now, I don't know the code inside and out, so I'm prepared to wear that a bit, but I would have thought that urine substitution would have to have been the most highly... what's the word I'm trying to use here? Well, certainly the worst type of offence you could commit in terms of anti-doping, because it's guilt before you even start. That's what it is. So, anyway, good luck to Willie. He'll come back at the end of the year. Who knows if he'll play this year for the West Coast Eagles, depending on, I imagine, how they're going at the time. But it was very interesting, I thought, yesterday when that news came through. Did you see the Cooper Cronk news?
This was on my topics of interest.
So
This is... You want a big story. I reckon this is a massive story.
So you explain it then while you're hot.
Okay, so Cooper Cronk, former Melbourne Storm legend, went to the Sydney Roosters to finish off his career, won a premiership up there, and then stayed on as an assistant coach for the Roosters on about $100,000 a year. He's not a fully fledged assistant coach. He's a part-time assistant coach for the Roosters.
Yep.
It has emerged that not once...
Harrison understands.
Yeah, not once, but twice now, that Cooper Cronk has been invited by the Melbourne Storm to come down and coach training.
Mm.
So he's an assistant coach at one club and he's helping out his former team at another club.
Mm. He has contracts at both clubs.
Well, but the thing is that the contract that he's got at the Melbourne Storm is more a sort of a commercial type situation of helping out with sponsors and, you know, maybe going to a lunch or maybe going to a super box and sitting in the stands watching a game with clients and all this sort of thing. But the photos emerged of him actually out there coaching the halfbacks in drills. Now, he wasn't wearing Melbourne Storm clothing. He was wearing his civilian clothes.
Civilians.
But then the response from Melbourne Storm and from his manager, they're very different stories as to why he was out there essentially taking training at a rival club. This is just, so,
it's
wow.
Remarkable. It's remarkable.
He did not tell the Roosters about the training session, and the Roosters obviously thought that it was an exclusive deal that they had.
Yeah, to help Trent Robinson, the coach of the Roosters, coach the half. So, and as you say, right, they think it was an exclusive deal. We own Cooper Cronk's coaching rights. That's fine. Melbourne Storm can have him for the poster. That's fine. Yeah.
So probably the difference between, say, a $25,000 arrangement to a $100,000 arrangement is somewhat exclusivity.
This is... I almost fell off my chair this morning when I read this. I didn't know it until this morning. It'd be like Jared... Like, I was just trying to put an AFL analogy to it. It'd be like Jared Ruffhead now.
Yes.
Who is was a legend of Hawthorn, now is coaching St Kilda. Going back to Hawthorn to help the key forwards just for a session.
No
because,
doubt.
Because he was there at the season launch.
That's a perfect...
There's no way Brett Ratton and Simon Lethlean and Matty Finnis are letting that happen.
No.
Not on your nelly.
But surely, like, Cooper would be going back to the Roosters saying, well, geez, the Storm are looking good now. What they're doing is they're doing this really interesting thing. Been watching the training a bit lately, and I actually participated in some drills, so I got a really good first-hand experience of what they're trying to do. I mean, yeah. I understand the connection he's got to both clubs, but the Roughhead example is perfect. It just wouldn't happen.
The only way...
No way.
The only way you see this is that Cronk wants out of his Roosters deal.
Well, because there's another layer to this, because Cronk and Smith have had this apparent falling out.
Rift.
And so, because he's probably more likely to get involved with the Storm if Smith isn't there.
Mm.
And then, who's their number one for the Storm? They're the really good player.
Pappenhausen.
Munster.
No, Munster. Well, no, Munster's come out and said,
not number one.
He's not number one. No, but I knew where he's going.
Yeah. No, where's number one, doesn't he?
No, anyway, no, fullback.
Where's
number
fullback
one?
And then Munster's come out and said, Cameron Smith, he's still got a fair bit of good footy left in. It's just like, where's he playing? The season starts in a week.
He'll pop up this season at Brisbane or Gold Coast, is what Cameron Munster said.
Smith. Munster said Smith will pop up at Brisbane or Gold Coast. Yeah, right.
Yes.
Yep. Next week.
Next week.
After no preseason.
Remember, I think it was back in 2001 when Alan Langer came out of retirement to play in the State of Origin?
Yes.
That was a big story at the time.
Some extraordinary things going on in the world of sport at the moment. There's a big day yesterday. The Cronk situation, the Rioli situation, and let alone the Jack Silvani situation at Marvel Stadium. 3 goals. A lot of people talking about that sort of stuff. Super Saturday for Australian Cup and Newmarket Handicap Day. And we go through the quaddie. We'll give you a chance for a bit of value with the Rama Ruffy and Dino's famous formula bet as well for one of our very lucky listeners. If you haven't registered to be a part of that, rsn.net.au is the place to do that and get Dino working for you on a Saturday. Let's have a look at the quaddie. It is race number 6, the first leg tomorrow, and it is one of the features. The Sepot Wines Newmarket Handicap, the time on of the event over the straight 6 down at Flemington, the 1,200 metres, 1.25 million. Up for grabs in this Group 1 affair, Dino. And at this stage, we have 17 going around because Kemal Pasa won't be taking its place, number 4, so bookmakers can rule a line. But down the bottom-ish for Chris Waller with Scotty's Man in the Saddle, September Run is a very, very firm favourite at $2.10, Dino.
Take the floor, Scotty. Tell me all about it. Well, it should win, so it won't. There you go, Dino.
Oh, that's a fair assessment.
Should win, but won't.
Why won't it win, Scotty?
The pressure might get too much.
Right,
might be a fancy ride or something might happen. Daniel.
You'd want to be a good horse to be getting almost even money in a new market, wouldn't you, Dino?
You would, Daniel. It's too short. I think she's the most likely winner because she's so dynamic down the straight. But it's an ordinary speed map for her. She's drawn in the middle. And I think the speed will go to the outside, so she's going to have to get to the, you know, get onto the back of the right horses because she is a back marker. Scotty's Man is on 33 outs at the moment, so this might be the one that turns it around. I think look, as I said, I think she's the most likely winner. Swats, that hasn't been able to beat her in the three meetings they've had, but meets her 2 kilos better and has a really good clear run at it down the outside. You've got Serious Suspect leading down the outside, and I think Swats, that will be not that far away, and I think will run very well. And if she is going to beat her, this is a really good chance. And I think there's a fantastic roughie in this race in Flit. She is a Group 1 performer at her best. She's been thwarted a bit by wet tracks over the last 12 months. I love the draw for her. She was given a very easy trial down the straight. Most of these horses went down the straight last week in a trial together. A lot of the main chances, such as Serious Suspect, Swats That, Flit, Elite Street, September Run, Celebrity Queen, all went down. Imaging, they all went down the straight together. And Flip was out the back, but she was just jogging along, and she's had one go down the straight for a win. But I'll be giving chances to certainly 15 Serious Suspect. I think the scratching of Kemmel passes helped his chances enormously, in that he'll just do his own thing down the outside and get into a good rhythm. He's got Jamie Carr aboard, and I think he'll run well. And little chances to a couple of, or certainly a couple of roughies. 6 Delasan. I just don't think Liam McDonald and Andrew Glewis are doing this for the sake of it, but setting this horse to try and win the race first up. And he has one down the straight. And 17 Prague, who I thought ran a super race first up and dropped 7 kilos for that run. And the best of his form is well up to this. And he's got a great draw down the outside. So tipping horses mainly down the outside. But in saying that, the favourite's the one to beat. But I think she is way too short.
Are the punters jumping into the 210, Quinny?
Yeah, has been well backed. It's firm throughout the course of the week from 250 into that 210 quote that's currently available. Swats That as $7 second to leg. There had been pre-post support for Serious Suspect. One bet of 2,000 at 26, another 1,000 at 15, now a $12 chance. Celebrity Queen at 13. Dino, by the sounds of it, you've clearly got September Run on top, but also clearly think she's way too short at the $2.10 quote. From a quaddie perspective, you've given us a couple of numbers. Would you do one with her, one out as well? Or are you happy to sort of put the six in that you suggested and hope that one of them can get her beat, and then you'll be very nicely set up for the rest of the program?
Yeah, I think that's probably the way I'd play it. And if I was having a bet in the race, $2.40 the place, Swats That, versus $2.10 the win, September Run. I think three chances of getting into the money with Swats That is a good bet, and even Flit at the really big odds, I think, has got a terrific chance.
Now, Dino, for fear of getting castigated by our friend Daniel, I'm still recovering from the Oakley Plate. You know who I'm going to talk about.
Yeah, and that's fine, the Brooklyn Hustle, red, white, great
should have won.
Crusher.
We all understand this, don't we?
Yeah, the Gatecrasher. Well, we love a Gatecrasher right here, Dino.
We're all appreciated should have won a Group 1.
Yeah, that's her style, and she needs everything to go right. And this is such a different race to the Oakley Plate. It's it'll be a test at 1,200 metres, and she has run okay down the straight. I'd be thinking that maybe the William Reid in a couple of weeks is more her race, right. But she can run a good competitive race here and then go to the William Reid, I'd imagine.
I had to mention it, Daniel.
No, you did. It's important to mention the Gatecrasher.
G-Town.
Any chance we get from G-Town. All right, Rammer. Let's have a bit of a summary of what Dino has talked about there, please, for the first leg of the quaddie of the Newmarket Handicap. Your job is to just give us the numbers, and that's all, please.
14, 18, 7, 15, 6, 17.
All right, 14, 18, 7, 15, 6, and 17 for the Newmarket. Let's have a look at the Matron Stakes over the mile. Leg number 2 of the quaddie tomorrow. And we have 10 going around. Much easier to digest 10 than 18 or 17, Dino. And I believe you're fairly confident with one here. Let's see if it's the favourite at tab.com.au. I don't think it is, because Lunacorn is number 7 for the Freedman Yard with Jamie Carr in the saddle. But I believe you're going a little bit outside that.
Yeah, I like Silent Sovereign here, Daniel, number 2. I thought her run first up to win at Caulfield was outstanding. Her second up run, I thought she should have won at Flemington. I thought young Will Price, who's an absolute star, but he just probably waited too long, and Quantum Mechanic got around him, got the fly on him, and then he was really hitting the line well. I think the way this race sets up, and with a very much informed Luke Curry aboard, I think Silent Sovereign's a great winning chance. I'm actually a little bit opposed to the favourite. I've got it in the numbers, but only just. I think Spanish Reef, who's got a win in this race previously, she can probably land probably outside the lead here, get an easy run and run well. Quantum Mechanic goes in. She's got a good draw. She's racing competitively. Scarlet Dream is a bit of a heartbreaker for those that like her because she gets out the back and has this big swooping finish. But her best runs are always first up, and they've got the blinkers back on her. And her poor winning strike rate reflects her racing style. She's won 2 of 25, but she could be running on. And Lunacorn can win. She'll need a really good ride from Jamie Carr, but it's probably on the cards because from the outside draw, she's going to be the hunted a little bit. They'll all know where she is, and she does need to relax to run 1,600 metres. So I'll put her in the quaddy, but I think she's a little bit of a risk. But no, I'm with very much with Silent Sovereign.
Righto. So are the punters on board with Dino here, or is the favourite firmly the one they're after?
Silent Sovereign is a $5.50 chance, the equal second leg with Quantum Mechanic at that quote. Lunacorn's been a popular favourite, 390 into 360. Then we've got Scarlet Dream, an $8 chance, Sovereign Award, $8.50. Lunacorn Dino, she just seems poisonous odds at $3.60 for a horse with her racing style and racing pattern. What sort of quote have you got her marked?
Look, I think she's more about a $4.50 chance, but the one thing they have done in her last couple of runs, they've ridden her more positively, so that makes it a really interesting speed map because she's drawn the outside, so do they, you know, press on with what they've been doing with her and hope that they get cover, or do they have to go a long way back like they used to ride her and then, you know, play for luck? If she goes back, I doubt she'll be winning. She goes forward, she's going to need just the right ride to get in. So that's why she's a bit under the odds for mine.
Cansino, Dino, I know it's Sandown Hillside, two wins, but is it the up-and-comer who's obviously up in class significantly, but good win last start?
Yeah, she's going well. She's been very well placed. The win two starts back, she was just nearly a weighted certainty the way she was going. And then last start was a bit the opposite. She overcame difficulties to win, and it was a good effort. I think this is, probably too much of a leap of faith for her tomorrow. But, she's an improving horse.
The TAB Australian Cup over the 2,000 metres, $1.5 million weight for age group one, is the third leg of the quaddy, race number 8 on the program. And another big field on a big day of racing, 17 going around, Dino, and that, don't tell me 50 stars can do this again for Ben and Tom.
I'm going to tell you that, Daniel. between Ben, Tom and David, they've won the last three, I think, with Harlem and winning twice, and of course, 50 stars last year, and it's a very similar pattern. Probably he had a harder run last week than he had going into, say, last year's Australian Cup and even the going into the McKinnon Stakes in the spring where he ran second to Arcadia Queen. But he's going very well. I thought the Sydney run was just a bit of an aberration, and he certainly put a lie to that form with a really good run last Saturday. And I'm going with him. I think the dangers, our horse was probably, you wouldn't have thought 3 or 4 months ago we're heading towards an Australian Cup, but a horse like Defibrillate has just become, well, he's an absolute winner through his career. He's now had 13 starts and won 9, so he knows how to win, and I've just got the feeling he'll measure up to this grade. I think number 9, Chapada's a good chance at odds. I think he should have gone very close to winning first up. There's a lot of those horses come through the Peter Young Stakes, and I thought his run was luckless. Every time he went to build momentum, he got stopped in his tracks. And the winner of that race was Paradis, this late entry for the Australian Cup, and rightly so. And she's come up with Barrier 1, which suits her. And the other late entry is Holmesman, who I thought ran pretty well in the Peter Young also, fitter for that run and has got a chance. But you could go on and on because there wasn't much between them in the Peter Young Stakes, but often that form changes a bit when they get to Flemington over 2,000 metres and a bit more pressure, and I think it sets up well for 50 stars.
Righto. Do the punters think that's going to be happening too, Quinny?
Yeah, 50 stars has been popular, a $4.60 chance. Paradis has done nothing but firm since that late entry fee was paid. $11 into 6 to be the second elect at that quote. Then we've got Steel Prince 11 into 9, Shared Ambition 11, Defibrillate a $12 chance with Nonconformist. Just on the second elect parody, Dino, do you ever factor in the late entry factor, or is it just something that you don't take into consideration?
Well, it depends on the scenario, and I think it's a good chance here that Danny O'Brien's looked at the form. Look, she was beaten. The last time she was beaten, it was by Defibrillate, so you can line them up. And then she went to the Gold Coast and won those two races in 7 days, freshened up, came back, won the Peter Young, and I'm pretty sure they'd have been hoping for a good draw here, and they've got it, and it's a good year to be probably paying the late entry, and the same with Team Williams with Holmesman. Obviously, wasn't considered you know, probably his ideal race a few weeks ago, but he ran well first up, and it comes up, you know, at the right time for him.
The Lindsay Park team have got a great recent record in this race, having won the last three editions and four of the last six. They've got the favourite 50 Stars, who you just gave a good push for. What do you make of Harlem, who's a two-time champion? And again, do you factor certain stables targeting certain races like this?
Well, he's back to Flemington. That's the key. He doesn't get a chance to race here often. But he's certainly, I think, more of a place chance. He's going okay, and he'll be better at Flemington, as I said. But that's the little query, whether he's got another win in him at this level. He's now nine.
Dino, you know I'm a Blinkers first time man. Big time. Nonconformist, third up. What have you made? First up was pretty good. Second up, so-so. Is this the moment we've been waiting for? I'm ignoring the draw too, just quietly.
Okay, well, ignore it at your peril. I think they'd love Blinker's first time and a good draw, and put him. You know, I think he'll be going forward. I think he's a chance. He's a horse that's, I think he's a good horse. He's won 4 of 12. His biggest win so far, he won the Alistair Clark. He looked pretty good, and he did win the Coonjee Handicap in the spring, and he beat Harlem less than half a length at Caulfield, where I don't think Harlem's at his best. And he got 6 kilos off Harlem. Now they meet virtually at level weights, or they do meet at level weights. So it's not as though he's got a lot over Harlem, and Harlem's at big odds. So he's in the mix, because it's that sort of. It's not a year like a Let's a Lope or a Better Loosen Up or a Northerly, or there's not that dominant weight for age horse. So it's up for grabs, and these horses in other years may not have even run in this race.
Question off the SMS, because there's no more Rosemont Stud stuff to talk about here.
No, I couldn't find anyone. Some of them might have spelled down there, but anyway.
Why, Dino, this is off the SMS, why would Ollie jump off Best of Days and get on Warning?
I would say it was probably a last-minute thing with Best of Days, and maybe locked into Warning a bit earlier. He's only had two rides on Warning, and he's won a Derby on him on fifth in a Rose Hill Guinea. So he's got a very good record on the horse. And listening to Sam Friedman speak yesterday about this horse, he mentioned that his best run last time in was 2,000 metres in the Turnbull Stakes here at Flemington. And when you look at it, a length behind Very Elegant, it was a good run, and he gave Very Elegant a kilo under the set weight and penalties. So I can see why he's got on him. Whether he's just good enough to win it first up, it'll be some sort of training effort if they get him over the line.
All right, so the numbers for... That's off the SMS. Thank you for your question, and thank you, Dino, for the answer. Numbers, please, for the third leg of the quaddie. Thanks, Rama.
3, 12, 9, 17, and 4.
Right, three legs down, one to go. The last one, the Tab CUNY Stakes over the mile. 3-year-old fillies, set weights group two event, $200,000 up for grabs. I'd like to win it. 11 going around, Dino. You don't have to go very far at all to find the favourite. Number one for the Hayes at Debenham Yard with D. Oliver in the saddle. Personal. Very, very fine. Oaks winner last time around. She won the Oaks, didn't she, Personal?
Yes.
That's right, yeah. Back in action, second up tomorrow at headquarters.
She's a very good chance, Daniel. She had the big weight penalty last start and ran well behind Zoo Dancer, who ran well in the Australian Guineas. I think she's a good chance. A lot of the form comes through the Armanasco Stakes a couple of weeks ago at Caulfield. It was won by Yes Baby Yes. I can make a really strong case that Miss Guggenheim, with reasonable luck, who ran 7th of 8, could have easily won that race. And I think she could have easily won the Manifold in the spring. Things haven't really gone her way. I actually like that she's drawn out tomorrow. They'll ride her back, but back with room. And she's got a good turn of foot. Whereas Personal's an incredibly honest horse. She doesn't sort of have that massive knockout punch at the end of a race, but she just puts herself in a winning spot and she then toughs it out. And that shows in her record. She's won 2 with 5 seconds from 10 runs. So she's not... There's nothing ingenuine about her. She's just a really honest horse, and I think she'll run well again. But I wouldn't be surprised if Miss Guggenheim used her turn of foot late and beat her. Personal's a good chance, and putting a rough or good odds chance in Island Joy, I just don't think things went right for her in the Vanity, in that she didn't get cover straight away, over-raced, looked like a good spot in running, being third, and I just don't think it suited her. I think Damien Thornton rides her really well. He'll ride her a bit quieter, and she can run well. But it's a very tough quaddy for mine, so we've got to take a chance somewhere, and this is where we do it.
Well, the chief of my punters club, Fanta Pants Walsh, is a part owner of Island Joy. He'll be very happy to hear.
Is he a redhead?
He may or may not be a redhead, my Fanta Pants. But he'll be very happy to hear that assessment from Dino with Island Joy in the last. What are the punters saying? Where's the money going, Quinny?
Personal's been the best backed runner here, 320 into 280. And the long shot that Dino gave a push there for, number four, Island Joy, is an $18 chance. Miss Guggenheim on the second line of betting at $6. With personal, Dino, what are your thoughts over the 1,600 metres tomorrow? We know that she's an Oaks winner. She's placed over this trip without winning, but do you think she'll take great benefit from tomorrow ahead of that Sydney preparation over more ground?
Oh, yeah, I think probably the Vinery and the Oaks are her missions, but this would be a lovely race to pick up on the way through. And that placing you mentioned in, over 1,600 was second to Odium in the 1,000 Guineas. So she's just a very effective horse, as her record shows. But, you know, I think she's not, you know, absolutely foolproof in that, you know, she can't just sprint away and put a race away. She'll just grind it out. And if that's how the race sets up, well, she'll be probably too tough.
What about the Danny O'Brien pair, Dino? Starrell first up was quite good. Safe Passage, he's got the blinkers on. Which one of them would you be favouring?
Starrell. I liked her a little bit first up. She ran okay. She can get in the money, and I know you'd be keen to back her with Craig riding her.
Yeah,
so.
No, I think he's due. Had a few outs.
How did this all start again? What happened?
You two need to get in the room. Well, sort it out.
No, we've had incidents. I've been accosted by family members at Flemington before. So we're just running with it. We understand. I think there was a
family
Moody
members.
Valley. Yeah, no, there was issues.
Right, security required.
You've got to stand your ground.
Well, you do, absolutely. That's one thing we love about you, Scotland. You always stand your ground.
I heard you didn't stand your ground and you dodged his manager's calls for 6 months afterwards.
Oh, no, me and Guesty are best mates now. Don't worry about that.
But he's no longer his manager.
Righto, so a story for another day, that one. We'll get to the bottom of that. Rammer, can you please give us the numbers for the last look at the quaddy tomorrow at headquarters?
10, 1 and 4.
Now, you're not going to believe this.
Oh, no.
You're not going to believe this.
We couldn't get through last week, you man.
He did, though.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he got carrier pigeon.
Now, off the SMS. Half. I was busy analysing the data from last night's world famous practice match between St Kilda and Carlton and missed the first couple of legs of the quaddy.
Quaddy's notes.
Can you please give them to us again? Rammer, can you help our friend out who's analysing data?
Okay, race 6, 14, 18, 7, 15, 6, 17. Race 7, 2, 3, 6, 5, and 7. Race 8, 3, 12, 9, 17, and 4. Then finally, race 9, 10, 1, and 4.
All right. They are your numbers on a Friday morning for the quaddy tomorrow at Flemington for Super Saturday. Let's get to the formula bet, Dino, for one of our lucky punters. Who are we playing for and where are you going this week?
Yeah, there's a few shorties, Daniel, but I'm going to take a couple at nice odds here, and hopefully one of them wins for him, and that'd be a result. And if both win, it'll be a terrific day. And that's for Chris Hurd of Brighton East. We're having $40 to win race 4, number 9, Cooled. And $40 the win at race 7, number 2, Silent Sovereign. And $40 on the all-up of the pair. Race 4, number 9, into race 7, number 2 for Chris Hurd of Brighton East.
4972, your numbers for the formula bet. Quinny, what does that come to pre-multiplier?
30.25. 550 by 550.
So oh, if we get five times that, that's 150.
I don't know. It might be a curse this five times, though. I'm cheering for the 0.02.
I'm cheering for the five times. I don't care what happens. I just want the five times one day. Right, at $30.25, 4972, the formula bet numbers for tomorrow. Good luck to our contestant. As I mentioned, if you haven't registered for that, you'd like to be a part of it, have a chance to work with Dino. I'll get Dino working for you, rsn.net.au. Now, the Ramarathi, is it SMS that came through about that, Dino? It's Tom from Tamworth. I want to find out from you very shortly why the Ramarathi is called that. But Tom wants to know. He says this about the Ramarathi. Dino, why is it called the Ramarathi and not the Leicester Load Up? I'll tell you in a second.
Ready to sting the bookies? This is Rammer's Ruffy for the all-new Kia Stinger. The perfect balance of power and refinement. Book a thrill ride and experience the new Kia Stinger.
That's the noise it makes, the Kia Stinger. It's an absolute cracker. Beautiful vehicle. I'd like to get one of those, I think. Why are we calling it the Rammer Ruffy, Dino, again? I forget.
Because we had to try and bring Rammer into the place.
Hold on.
Otherwise, he just says numbers, numbers. Really boring sort of stuff. I think, Tom, by the way, I'm not sure how many listeners we have from Tamworth, but it's great to have your message and keep them coming through 0416 90 5052. I think that's essentially the truth. We just wanted to include
Rammer. Just an idea one day.
At one stage. So who is the Rammer Ruffy for Tom from Tamworth tomorrow, Dano?
Well, she wasn't my top pick in the Newmarket, but, gee, I think she's big odds, and that's Flit, race 6, number 7.
Race 6, number 7, barrier 17 in the Newmarket. What's the odds, Quinny?
23 the win, 5 the place.
Oh, we'll take it. We will take it and run. So race 6, number 7, Flit is our Rammer Ruffy for the weekend.
I was one on one going into full back and sort of was just tracking the ball backwards, and young Zach Sproul just threw a knee straight into my ribs, so I can thank him for that. Kind of got winded and then proceeded to finish training, and then later that night, just, you know, tossing in bed, it started to get a bit more painful, and then probably the afternoon, the day after, I got the scan, and I'd been told that there was a little bleed in there. The pain sort of continued, and I thought I'd better get in, and end up spending 9 nights in hospital. I've tried a fair bit of running, and I'm not, you know, fully agreeing with that at the minute. So I just need the liver to shrink in size, so the lung can sort of cope with it all.
Lockie Whitfield, has it been a nice little while for him? Restless sleep, amongst a host of other things there for our man, who's a very, very talented young man and very important to the GWS Giants.
Very nasty injury.
Do you know more about it, do you? Have you been there?
Very nasty. No, I don't back in the packs. It's craziness. Craziness.
You don't expect that sort of stuff at training. Well, but goodness me.
There's so much match simulation at training now. Unfortunately, the accidents will happen like that.
He's had a few of those sort of injuries in the last couple of years. You think back to the grand final that he was carrying ribs. Yeah. So, and with Zach Williams not there this year, he's even more important coming out of halfback. And I reckon the first 8 weeks of last year, he was, you know, a lock for an All-Australian in that sort of
Whitfield,
running defender role.
Whitfield, Zach Williams, Heath Shaw, Aiden Core all out of that back line now. Sam Taylor comes back into the back line, so it'll be interesting to what mix they go with, the Giants.
I agree. Or if there's a reshuffle of players from forward to back.
Yep,
or
correct. Yeah. Well, they've got so many mids. Maybe one does go to halfback now.
See what Leon does with that. He's got some work to do. Some news coming through, by the way. Our poor old friends in New Zealand, they just can't take a trick at the moment. They've got COVID everywhere. Outbreaks.
Everywhere.
Well, not quite everywhere, but they're locked down.
10 cases.
Lockdown they've been. They've had their third earthquake of the day in the North. I think it's North Island, 8.0 on the Richter scale. The third one of the day. So it was a 7.2 I saw earlier this morning, and now an 8 magnitude earthquake happening in New Zealand. I can't quite work out. I'll find out where it is, which part of the island.
Which has created tsunami warnings for Australia.
Has it?
Yep.
Right. Oh. Well, there you go. So we're on tsunami watch around here as well. It's not ideal.
Well, I don't know how serious the tsunami warnings are for Australia, because there seems to be a fair bit of water between the two countries, but I'm serious, there has been a...
It's sort of where the tsunami comes from, though, isn't it? The water.
Yeah, it does, yeah. From a neighbouring country. You shouldn't laugh about these sorts of things.
Oh, no, I'm not laughing at
the scenario, I don't think. Maybe perhaps the delivery.
There were some Premier League matches. That is one, actually, a big one going on at the moment. 37 minutes, it's a Liverpool 0, Chelsea 0. But in the two results so far, West Brom 0, Everton 1, and Fulham 0, Tottenham 1. So that's happened there. And the Pakistan Super League, I failed to mention this earlier on this morning.
What happened?
In my basket of interesting things that have happened in the last 24 hours.
Cricket roundup.
The Pakistan Super League has been suspended because of a COVID outbreak. And the interest from an Australian perspective is that Fawad Ahmed has got the illness. And also a guy called Tom Banton. Now, you might remember Tom Banton played for Brisbane Heat, not the summer just gone, but the one before that. And he was going to come this year, and he decided, nah, I'm not coming. I don't want to do the quarantine. I don't want to play, you know, have to do that just to play. So he decided not to come. And now he's got it. So I think there's about 8 to 10 players and officials that have got it. So as a result of that, they've gone, that nah, we're just going to hold proceedings
so
for the time
being. Cancelling, just postponing.
I think at this stage, they're just pressing pause and working out what to do. Who knows?
Okay.
It's a developing story.
Okay. All right. That is a developing story. What's happening at Arnold Palmer, the Bay Hill Invitational? Because we were talking all week about that. We mentioned the other day when we spoke to Cam Percy, yep, who got a start in the Arnold Palmer with his top 20 performance,
yes,
last week.
Yeah.
How's Cam going?
He shot even par in his first round, mm, which okay, puts him in a tie for 40th at this stage. So that's a solid start. Rory McIlroy is the leader at 6 under par. He's in the clubhouse. Bryson DeChambeau is also in the clubhouse. He hasn't been playing as well recently.
No, he has not.
He's at 5 under, looking for the best Australian. Oh. Well, your man, Jordan Spieth, I know he's an Australian. He's tied for 10th at 2 under.
Best Australian is Cam Percy.
Is Cam Percy.
Well, there you go.
Jason Day's even through 10, so he's still got a few to go, of course. And Mark Leishman, 2 over, 74 for him. We claim Danny Lee because he's good fun. He's 2 over through 14 as well. Matt Jones, 3 over through 14. Cam Davis, 4 over for his round today, 76. And they are the Aussies. And
there's some big numbers there. So even par isn't too bad. Even though that Cam played in the morning, he'd be, I think, reasonably happy with that result.
Well, there's plenty of good names sitting deep in the leaderboard there. So Cam's done a good job. Well done to him.
I see the man missing. Obviously, Tiger's missing. They think he might have fallen asleep now.
Well, yeah, I did read that yesterday.
Yeah. So he got up, it was 7 in the morning, he was rushing to an appointment and he had a little kip.
Well, there's a black box.
Yes, the mystery black box.
What? I didn't know there were black
cars.
Yeah.
In the cars.
Yeah, apparently.
In his car there was a black box.
Yeah, the black box can't tell if you fell asleep or not.
Well, it can say
he's got a camera in it now as well.
I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't even think the black boxes are black boxes.
No, they're probably white.
What colour are they?
Well, I don't think they're black.
Yeah, here we are. They're
since when
box
has the car been a black box venue?
No, well,
how come this is the first we're hearing of vehicle
retrieved data from the device? That might say if he touched the brakes and stuff like that.
Righto. I was not aware that you could do that, I must admit. But he seems to be in good spirits. All the feedback we're getting from Tiger, considering the damage, he does seem to have been in pretty good spirits.
So, yeah, some good tweets from him.
Black boxes, by the way, just a bit of detail for you.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Must be painted orange or bright yellow.
There you go.
There you go.
But so they can find them.
But they needn't look like boxes.
See, isn't that interesting?
So there's actually nothing about black or boxy about them.
That's right. That's quite remarkable. You'd think if you were one of those people that sort of are rummaging through the forest trying to find the plane, and then they find the plane, they'd be looking for a black box.
Yeah.
But no, they're looking
for a
circle, fluorescent yellow hexagonal-shaped device or something.
I'd be rattled by that.
I'd be like, what's this?
Walk straight past that.
That's right. No wonder they're hard to find.
Right.
Anyway, we digress.
We do digress. In the world of football. Now, the Max Gawn situation at the D's, Scotty.
Yeah, well, 4 years.
4 years signed. He's part of our Inner Sanctum team here in the Breakfast Club, so we love Maxi. But the news yesterday, he signed the 4-year deal.
He's 29. Yeah, he's captain. He's not going to go anywhere, but he deserves it because he's carried this team for a few years.
Nah, it's a smart deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolute smart deal.
Load him up.
Best ruckman or one of the best ruckmen in the competition, captain of the football club. Lock him in.
Yep.
Plenty of stability there. Melbourne are obviously hoping this is their window now for the next little period of time.
Do you think he needs to go forward more? Because it looks like that's what they're going to try and do to give maybe more of an opportunity for Luke Jackson. Yeah. Or is he just, he's the ruckman and Luke Jackson's just got to become a forward until Max gets tired?
They'll protect Luke Jackson for as long as possible. But I think you'll find, Jackson might play 20% in the ruck and Gawn plays at 80% in the ruck. So whether it's to the bench or deep forward, he's not a great goal kicker, Max.
He's horrible.
Yeah.
But he'll say that.
He's been very open about that. Yeah.
So I think it's probably more important to let him rest than rather than push him forward.
It's a big year. Isn't Petraka and Oliver sort of sitting on their heels and watching what happens regarding contracts and
Oliver
future?
Is. Oliver Petraka is. Petraka signed at the start of last year.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I think it was only a short-term deal, though, wasn't it?
Mm.
3, maybe maximum?
Yep.
It's an interesting year for them. For a lot of people in Melbourne.
So you're saying sit on their heels and
he's not
at the footy club and...
Well, Oliver, you'd be offering, I gather, a 5-year deal right now to try and lock
Oliver him up. Was thrown up at trade time.
Well, no, there was noise that he was unhappy.
Well, I think there was a
through
bit of,
family
there
friends.
Might have been a bit of mutual sort of, well, we'd listen.
Well, you'd get something very good if you did it properly and went and tried to sell him.
Actually, it's an interesting point that, Rama, are there any, you'd know this better than all of us, are there many players now who are strictly off the table, that the clubs would not deal with?
Yep.
In comparison to recent, like decades before, like last 10 years, is it less or more players in that category?
Probably more. And they're
really?
They're probably
more off the table.
Yeah, they're in particular areas of the we can't let go of that defender. It's not. He's just so important to our setup, and these are the reasons why.
Yeah,
we can't let go of Max Gawn. He's so important to this setup here. So yeah, it's probably getting. I think we always talk about untouchables, but I think they are becoming probably more. So.
I must admit, I would have thought it would have been less.
But Melbourne's trade value is through their midfield. Everyone says they've got so many midfielders that they can, you know, that can play through there. That's where their value is. Like you look at James Harm, for example. North Melbourne chased him really hard last year.
He became a bit surplus, didn't he?
Well, he got taken out of the midfield.
He signed a four-year deal at Melbourne the year before. Melbourne weren't letting him go.
We talked about this, guys, earlier in the week when neither of your... Scotty, we're in the studio.
We would have been listening, though.
Yeah, about the team that is under the most pressure this season. I'm reluctant to be talking about this on March 5, Daniel. But,
you're really embracing
the pressure index really in your mind this week.
Yeah, because we had Nathan Buckley last night, or yesterday, there was an interview on AFL.com talking about his future and what it looks like because he is out of contract. We sort of thought that Carlton and Collingwood might be the two teams that are under most scrutiny. But where does Melbourne sit in that scrutiny stakes?
Oh, they're as level as they are, clearly. Because you've got... I'm looking at a coaching perspective.
Yeah.
So David Teague's, I believe, I don't think Robert Walls has decided he could be sacked, but I don't think David Teague will be sacked
We both thought that David may have been a little bit surprised having his cornflakes.
And I don't think... I mean, the Bucks thing, I think he's coached very well. He's had a few speed humps, clearly, of recent times. I don't think he's about to get sacked either. I know he's got a new deal coming.
But a lot of it's about expectation, isn't it? About where you think the team will finish.
Yes.
So and is this? Are you saying this to win the premiership or play finals?
In Melbourne's situation, what he's seen as a pass mark going into this season?
I think it's playing finals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If they struggle again, well, the coach is completely under the gun.
Yeah, and they acknowledge that. They acknowledge they need to play finals this year.
So of those three teams, Collingwood, Carlton and Melbourne, who is the team you think are most likely to play finals? Because the three of them can't make it.
Collingwood.
I think Collingwood and Melbourne are most likely.
Collingwood and Carlton, Melbourne is how I'd rate them.
Collingwood, Carlton, Melbourne.
So I'm Collingwood, Melbourne, Carlton.
This is for finals?
Yeah.
Even just ladder position.
Yeah, well,
ranking,
I suppose, yeah.
Power ranking.
Power rank, a Breakfast Club power ranking. We've never done this before. It's certainly not in March.
You are an employee, one of them.
Yeah, no, I would think it has to be, for Melbourne's sake, Melbourne, Carlton, Collingwood.
Collingwood's the least of those three to make it, the eight.
I think the Pies might dip.
Wow.
And I just think Melbourne have to. Otherwise, there will be ramifications.
Melbourne, well, there we go.
What's your power ranking?
Ramifications. We've got it. This is what we're talking about. It's like a pressure index. It's a ramification index.
I'm
a bit like Daniel, to be honest. I think it's Melbourne, Collingwood, Carlton. I think that Collingwood's had the reset it may have had to have. And Collingwood's done this before. If you go right the way back to when Collingwood lost that final to Port Adelaide, which was about 13 or 14, then they made some tough calls on their list and they bounced quite well. This is what, you know, they've been brave, I think, and it might be a reset year and then they then push up again. So I kind of feel there's more at stake for Melbourne. Based on an overall picture, there might be more at stake for Nathan Buckley, but not so much the Collingwood Football Club.
Good to get the win, but there's a lot of errors that happened in the game, and you know they kicked a lot of goals in their forward 50, so D50 need to tighten up a little bit with our mids and defenders. But it was pleasing to get the win. It's good to be back in Melbourne playing footy, so yeah, super happy with the result.
And it's good to have the men's game back in Melbourne. Don't you worry about that. Bradley Hill, who was very, very good last night for the Saints in their victory over the Blues to kick off the pre-season competition, the Amy Community Series in 2021. It was 125-99. Bradley Hill had a nice game. That audio, thanks to Fox, just by the way. But Jack Sinclair had a cracker as well. 28 disposals for Jack, leading all comers on the ground. He's been good enough to join us this morning on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Jack.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Going very well, thanks. Nice to be playing footy in Melbourne.
Yeah, it was. Been a long time. Obviously, and I hadn't played there for the year before, so, yeah, good to see the fans back. And, yeah, really enjoyed last night.
We were talking about the fan factor earlier this morning, in fact. I mean, and you had spasmodically last year through the bubble situation, there were fans interspersed amongst some of the games. But what was it that experience like again? Marvel Stadium, it's an echoey sort of chamber of noise when the fans were up and about. Was it different to last year?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, obviously the fans wouldn't have been able to go for over a year. So really good to have them there, and yeah, great to have a bit of atmosphere and yeah, a few nerves, I think, for me personally. Just having the fans back, but yeah, it was really exciting.
Now, before we talk about the football, the haircut, this is yes. Really sort of cultivated sort of 6 to 9 months worth of activity behind sort of the back of the head. Talk to us about how was this a conscious thing, or clearly it was. Why did you decide to go the way you did?
Well, it probably started last year in lockdown, and yeah, obviously weren't really allowed to leave the house, so started growing it out, and then didn't really trust anyone to cut it for a while until I let Ben Kent have a crack while we were in Noosa. He was giving out a few haircuts, but no, I don't know. Just thought I'd try something different, really, and yeah, kept growing it, and it is what it is now. But yeah, I'm not too sure. Mixed opinions, obviously, but
we love it.
Yeah, I'll keep it for a little while, I think.
Very, very healthy out the back. So just and talking about out the back, the role that you played last night was more that sort of sweeping halfback role. You got a ton of the footy. Is this something that you've tried a lot through the preseason, and is it something we might see in the regular season?
I probably haven't tried it a whole lot until the last few weeks. We've got so many midfielders that, yeah, we'll just have to have heaps of guys sort of swapping positions, playing half forward, you know, wing, half back, and even inside mid. So, yeah, hadn't really been there much until the last few weeks. So I think Rafa's been pretty happy. And, yeah, I think I'll probably play there a fair bit once the season starts, but still get some midfield minutes and possibly forward. I was a little bit last night, but, yeah, mainly probably midfield and half back, I think.
Jack, 34 goals last night combined with both teams. I'm just interested, is that the speed that you guys want to play at this year? I loved it, personally, watching the game at home, because it was exciting, it was up-tempo. Was it too quick at times?
Yeah, it definitely was. Yeah, we sort of found it hard to defend sometimes if we did turn the ball over. So I think, yeah, we've got to strike a good balance there, and I think the game probably slowed down a bit in the second half just because it was so fast-paced, and with the full-length quarters now, I think, yeah, the boys probably struggled a bit to keep it going. So there's a balance there, but you know, we don't want to take away from our strengths and guys like Healy and our speed with, you know, Seb and Gresh through the midfield. Yeah, we certainly do want to move the ball quick at times.
Did you think the first quarter was ever going to end?
No, I think I came off at the 18 minute mark, and we're only halfway through the quarter, so pretty different to what we've had the past year. And but no, look, it's good to get the time in the legs, obviously, and yeah, there are heaps of goals, so there's no surprise. It went a bit longer than normal, but, yeah, certainly just the full game felt like it went for ages compared to what we've experienced the past year.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.